You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 30th, 2009. This is episode 112, the best and worst picks of 2009. Welcome back to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is the last show of 2009 and episode 112. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Welcome to the end of the year. My podcasting partner here, Casey the Wonder Dog, is sleeping away, so we'll hope to make it through another podcast with his assistance.
Well, we'll try not to wake him.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to close this year exactly the way we closed last year. We're kind of stuck in a rut, but I think it's one that I really enjoy, and that's focusing on the three best and three worst picks of the year.
Yeah, probably one of my favorite segments of the show, Martin, is being able to share picks each week as we do the podcast. And on the weeks that Gail joins us, she also always has an interesting pick to share as well. And so we compile all of those onto a Picks of the Week page. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't visited that page, it really becomes an excellent resource to, you know, check out all the different things that we're talking about and discovering and sharing with the audience on the show. We have it organized into different categories, and basically you and I take our picks from the entire year and look at which ones really floated to the top and which ones sunk to the bottom.
So how do you go about making a pick? Maybe a behind-the-scenes look at the Sally Draper selection process.
It's real scientific. Get ready. I just do a lot of reading, as you do. I think that's probably one of my hobbies is in this information age, just tapping into all the different blogs. And especially for me this year, it's been a lot of Twitter feeds that I've really enjoyed. A lot of different educators in particular are just doing a phenomenal job sharing resources via Twitter.
Right.
And so as I find new resources, then I try them out. I like to try them out with the kids that I teach over in computer lab at our school here in Sleepy Eye. And certain things just really catch my eye and engage the students and all those different things. So those are the ones I like to share with others.
Yeah, one of the things that I look at, well, a couple of things. First of all, what we try and do, and I don't know that we're always successful, but I think we get close most of the time, is pick things that make a difference in ministry. You know, there's all kinds of technology tips that we could latch onto, but a lot of them have to do with productivity. You know, making our lives simpler, which is what the computer's major purpose is, to help us be more efficient and to enable us to do our jobs a little bit better, whatever those jobs are, in any area of ministry. So a lot of my picks come from actual conversations that I've had with different people. I get emails and calls every day, from people across the Synod and elsewhere, just other acquaintances and other networks that I have, and just in general inquiries. What's the best way to do this, or how do you handle that? So a lot of it comes from researching those kinds of questions, or just solving some of my own problems, of which there are many, of course. I'm always looking for ways to get the job done a little bit better. So there's lots of different sources. I listen to other podcasts where there are resources referenced and blog reading, and you mentioned Twitter. Those are all great resources. And one of the things that I really enjoy is some of our listener recommendations, where we make picks. They also make picks or comment on our picks.
Yeah, and I think it's just a really wonderful community that we've built here around the Wells Tech podcast, because we all have that commonality of wanting to spread the gospel in whatever way we do that, as a called worker, as a lay worker in our congregation, whatever it might be. And so with that common goal, we share a lot that can be useful to others. You know, as we learn things and are able to share it via the podcast, that's a really powerful thing.
Yep, that's the whole point of, I think, this whole podcast and the network that's kind of grown up around it, which I guess I wasn't expecting when we started, you know, 112, 111 episodes ago. So we're on 112 now. So,
like ancient history.
Yeah, I know. it's kind of cool looking back at last year's show and some of the best and worst picks that we had there. That seems like a long time ago, just looking back at the picks of our best and worst there as well. End of 2009. Go ahead, Zelly.
I was just going to say, it's been quite a year, kind of a very changing year in terms of digital resources, mm-hmm. with the whole skyrocketing of social media, Facebook, Twitter, just really taking off. And then that whole aspect of the iPod, the iPhone, all the applications that are available there that you can have in your pocket, basically the size of a credit card practically.
Yep. And
just an amazing year that we've lived through. And I guess to wrap it all up, looking to the future, there's Google Wave, which mm-hmm. Many of our Wells Tech friends have played with and been part of our public Wells Tech Wave. And who knows what's in store in that regard mm-hmm. in the future.
Yep. And you found an interesting video that maybe we can share with the listeners as well.
Sure. It's kind of a compilation of 2009. It's not all technical, but it was done in Google Wave. So mm-hmm. a really neat way to display the power of Wave. It's called Waving Goodbye to 2009. So if there are some out there that haven't seen it yet, you might want to check out that link in our show notes.
Yeah, not for the ADD in the crowd. It moves pretty fast. So should we get on to the picks?
You bet.
So how do you want to do? Let's start with the worst, all right? I think that's the way we did it last year. And
stick with tradition, huh?
That's right. Good Lutherans we are. And ladies first, if you want to take your first worst, and then we can rotate through the list.
Okay, and I'll start with a disclaimer. It's always hard to pick the worst. And I guess it's hard to pick the best, too, because there's a lot of best. But worst isn't necessarily that it's a bad application, but that it's something that I didn't find useful or adopt mm-hmm. into my day-to-day work processes. So my number three on my list is something called Reminder Feed. And basically what this allows you to do is set up your own RSS feed with dates and things that you want to be reminded of. Mm-hmm. And it will basically nag you via RSS, an RSS feed that you subscribe to, with things like birthday and anniversary reminders or any kind of appointment or calendar-oriented type mm-hmm. events. And good concept, and if you're into RSS, maybe this is the way for you to get those kind of reminders. But for me, I found it to be just kind of one more thing.
Right.
And it didn't really integrate well with the calendaring and other tasks list that I use, and so I didn't really adopt Reminder Feed like I thought I would when mm-hmm. I made it a pick of the week.
Yeah, and most calendars do a good job of that in and of themselves, and almost all of us probably have some kind of an electronic calendar, whether that's a Google Calendar or Outlook or whatever it is, that they will do those, you know, pop-up reminders, something that, you know, we all probably live in our calendars at some point during the day, so it's not hard to get reminded of those things if you just plop it on the calendar.
Right, and, you know, I should have known better, because if you look back at my 2008 best picks,
mm-hmm.
one of
I
mine
see
was
that
calendar.
Google
was
calendar.
Google Calendar,
right.
So, you know, I just didn't go there with adopting Reminder Feed.
Yep, sometimes our memories are short.
Yeah.
My pick is kind of on the list for the same reason. Not that it's essentially bad, a bad technology or even a bad pick necessarily, but something that's just another thing. And that's Tumblr, T-U-M-B-L-R, which is essentially a log or a blog of all different sorts. It's a simplistic approach to a blog where you can embed media. You can embed audio files, video files, text, quotes, links, Very simple. They've got a nice iPhone interface for it as well. But again, it's not a bad thing. It's just another blog. And I have a blog, you know, that's based on WordPress, which has far more features and far more integration. Tumblr just seems like a more immature tool compared to WordPress. You know, kind of the danger of reviewing tech is distraction. So you think of, you know, things being very cool, and you know, it is fairly cool technology, and they're very innovative in what they do. But you get spread too thin sometimes, and it's hard to focus. So at some point, I was updating four or five different blogs, and you know, you had auto notification where if you posted to one blog, it would post automatically to the other. I almost needed a roadmap to determine where I was posting my content. So at some point during the year, I said, you know, enough of this. You know, people can find me and I can direct them to one place. That's probably a better thing. And on top of that, if you go to Tumblr, it's a little seedy. There's some content there that, you know, not that that is always a bad thing, that we don't want to be in those places. But, you know, again, just another thing that I could probably live without, and you know, good intentions, but didn't follow through.
So, you know, I guess maybe the moral of the story is simple is better, but until you have the experience of these different tools, you don't know which ones are worth, you know, getting rid of and worth keeping. So,
right.
It's good that you tried it for us, Martin.
Yep. Well, I had a similar experience with FriendFeed. I was really excited about that it would aggregate all of my content, and it became just another, you know, another leg in the stool, and I had too many legs already, so... That doesn't count as my second one, by the way. So
okay.
All right.
I was counting.
All right.
Stop.
You're up.
All right. Number two for me is Lovely Charts. You can find it at lovelycharts.com. And boy, they do make lovely charts there. The name is appropriate. You can do all kinds of org charts and flow charts and diagrams online. It's a Web 2.0 tool, and it's free. So can't argue with the price. My problem with this one is that I just didn't have a huge need for doing charts. It's nice to have it kind of tucked away as a resource I can go to if I have that need, but I can't say that that's something that we do a lot of in ministry type setting. So I had to put this one on my worst list this year.
Yeah, I can see that too. And that's part of the challenge when you work through some of these picks is, you know, our main purpose is ministry, and even though it might be cool technology and maybe a good business tool sometimes, or even a personal tool, if it doesn't have an impact on your day-to-day work in ministry, then it becomes a little less usable or valuable. My second worst pick, and Sally, this is I think going to I think this is at odds with maybe how you approach and how you use Google, and that's iGoogle. iGoogle is that personal, I guess you'd call it a personal, customizable homepage where you could throw widgets that do different things. You could have weather widgets, calendar widgets, email widgets. All kinds of things as a kind of a personal dashboard. And I've used iGoogle off and on over the years, and I recommended it when I was on it. but I think part of the problem I had with it is, well, first of all, some of the widgets would not always be real stable, so they would fail to load. Second is, you know, one of the primary reasons to have it is have your information that you're most interested in at your fingertips, and one of those was Gmail. And the Gmail implementation, at least of the widget I was using, was a little funky, where if you clicked on an email, you're still kind of in iGoogle, but you're really not, and you're kind of in Gmail, but you're really not, so it had some limited functionality. Plus, if that was your home page, I found it also to be a distraction. You had all kinds of stuff looking at you, depending on how many widgets you had there. So I think there's some potential for iGoogle, and I know Google probably has great plans for it, but I think that's not going to happen until we move more into a complete Web 2.0 world, and maybe it becomes more of an application launcher. Maybe that's a Chrome OS start page, something like that. So iGoogle would be number two on my list.
And I do use iGoogle for my home, We'll talk about it later, but we have a common computer in our kitchen, and that's our homepage there. You know, and I think with the kids, the widgets are really appealing. Mm. But you know, from a business getting things done kind of perspective, I can kind of agree with your perspective on that.
All right.
So makes I'll sense. Kind of hard to hear that Google word though, and the worst picks. I mean,
that's right. Although, and I've got another one coming up too.
So. Yeah.
Go ahead, number one.
All right. The one that I listed as number one is a website I think that has incredible potential. It's called Learning in Hand, and it's basically a compilation website where someone's gone through and put together different mobile type applications for education setting. And this includes everything from cell phones, PDAs, iPods, iPhones, Game Boys, PlayStations, netbooks, even more. And great concept. I guess from my perspective, in an education setting, I don't see us, at least here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, and probably a lot of our Lutheran elementary schools, going to handheld devices in the classroom anytime real soon. It is an affordable way to do a distributed digital kind of education, but I think we've got a little ways to go before we're ready to invest in that direction. Mm-hmm. So, need applications. I think if I can get my do-it-yourself project done over Christmas or sometime soon, having a visualizer, something that you could project
right.
an iPod with, would allow a classroom to, you know, kind of participate in that small portable technology. But actually investing in it at a school level isn't going to happen here real soon, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. You had a pick though recently that would be where you could display the screen on your iPod Touch in the classroom, right?
Right, that do-it-yourself visualizer yeah. concept using mm-hmm. a webcam. So if I get that done, maybe I'll feel a little different. But as far as putting it in the kids' hands,
right?
We're still a
maybe
little
a little bit before be ahead of yeah. its time.
Yeah, we're a little old school in that we have our, you know, desktop computers still in place. Mm-hmm. So, and they're very effective for what they're doing for us right now.
Yeah, I think mobile technology and a lot of things in technology as it affects education is going to hit higher ed and then high school and then trickle down to elementary. I think we had a conversation with Gail Potratz about that as well, where it seems that that's the evolution as we're seeing. Obviously, all college students are taking, obviously have laptops or are taking laptops into classrooms or netbooks, those kinds of things, and now it's going to trickle down into high school and potentially into elementary schools after that.
We did get a netbook at our school, you know, so we have
right.
that ability. We have one that can be shared in a classroom, you know, for different research reasons and stuff. So, I mean, we're dipping our toe in the water, but I just don't think we're quite there with the portable technology at that level.
I think we're going to see that really boom probably in 2010. Okay. Especially if Apple comes out with their tablet. Other tablets are coming out that are going to be, you know, kind of hybrid devices. They may not be full computing devices, but they could be used for educational purposes, I would think. And I'm thinking that all the vendors are thinking in those terms as well, where they're portable, they're connected, they're simple to use. We'll see.
Okay.
My worst pick of the year is another Google product. Actually, it's a combo. A while back, I had talked about a beta that came out of Google called SideWiki. And SideWiki basically attaches itself to your browser and enables you to annotate the web. We talked about some of the negatives when we introduced the pick, and those negatives still exist. But the thing that I really wanted to focus on, in order to use SideWiki, you have to install Google Toolbar. And it has some decent features, but you know, maybe just toolbars in general would be a better worst pick for me. I generally hate toolbars. They crowd the screen, so you're losing screen real estate. They typically slow the browser down. And a lot of the features are one-click access. While you think they might be cool to start with, I find them less useful over time. They're kind of gadgets, and shiny, and we like shiny things and we like to try them out, but over the long haul they don't increase productivity. In fact, they may slow it down. So the search feature within the Google toolbar is available, built into Google Chrome, which is one of the browsers I use most often, so I think they'd actually have a better implementation of it. But in the end, I think Google Toolbar and SideWiki, which comes with it, is kind of unnecessary. It's just another add-on, something else to add to the system. So that I would call my worst pick of the year.
It seems like that whole annotating the web, which SideWiki is good at, Digo does much better.
Right, yep.
And allows for sharing with groups and things like that. So I think if we're going to standardize on an annotation tool, it would probably be Digo.
I would agree. All right, now the fun stuff, best picks.
Stuff.
What did we get right this year? I'd rather talk about that anyway.
Well, 2008 ended with a selection of an EduBlog winner. EduBlog is kind of a group effort at evaluating the best education material out on the web. And the winner for the best resource sharing blog was a blog called Free Tech for Teachers. It's done by a teacher up in the Northeast. He's just a young guy, and he just cranks out this amazing list of free technology that's available from so many different resources and organized by subject area and that kind of thing. So I think his name is Robert Brin, and he just does an amazing job of pulling together these resources. And so because he was picked in 2008, then I began following him in 2009, and he actually fed me a lot of my picks of the year, especially from the education
one of those sources,
standpoint. So a great blog to follow, and he's just always full of useful ideas. He doesn't just put out there the resource, but he adds to it how it could be used in education. What are some applicable activities to do with the resources he identifies and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So if you aren't reading Free Tech for Teachers, I would highly recommend it.
Very good. I knew you would be educational focused. That's
yeah.
what we count on you for, Sally. So
useful stuff.
That is excellent. My third best pick of the year is something that I picked recently, and I've actually picked twice, so that would suggest that I think highly of it. And that's a PDF application called Foxit, Foxit PDF, foxitsoftware.com. Just a great implementation of reader software, which is free. It's like Adobe Acrobat or Adobe PDF Reader. But it tends to be a little lighter weight, so the install is very quick, the load time is very quick, fewer security issues. And we just saw some news, I think earlier this week, that talked about some security flaws in Adobe Reader 9. So there's reason to maybe steer away from the Adobe products, and Foxit is a good alternative. It's cheaper. When you get into the creator, editor, organizer, designer versions, those are all cheaper than what Adobe offers for essentially the same products. As I mentioned, they've got different flavors or different varieties, but the one that I'm using now is kind of the suite. They call it Foxit Phantom PDF Suite for $129. Includes all those things where you can create, you can edit, you can organize pages, you can design forms, annotation, all those kinds of things are available with Foxit Phantom. They claim it's three times faster, than Adobe, and there's few things that I've found that it can't do in comparison to Adobe. In fact, there's a 20% discount for schools and other nonprofits, so you can chop that price down even further if you're interested in using that. And PDFs are important, I think, as we're getting into more information sharing in a digital fashion over the internet and on the web. You need to find a format that is going to be universally accessible, and you really can't count on, let's say, Microsoft Word, because there's many versions of that. PDF is fairly ubiquitous, and you can count on people being able to open it with a free reader, and a lot of A lot of people are going that direction, and it makes the file a little bit smaller, and the fonts stay in the file itself, so that's a good thing. So Foxit PDF.
You know, I think that's one of the must-have kind of applications for a church office, mm-hmm. And school office. As we communicate via the web, we need to adopt some standards, and I think PDF is one that all of us should be using in our ministry communications. Mm-hmm. So don't skimp there, folks. You know, that's a place to go ahead, and this is a good price to do it at, but, yep. You know, to have the tools that you need to do it correctly.
Absolutely. All right. Number two for you.
Number two for me is Animoto for educators.
I love Animoto.
Animoto is the coolest website to come out this year. I just really love it. It allows you to do video using your images, as well as even uploading video as well. And it mixes it together in a really nice motion feel. It adds music and just a really cool way to express things. You can include text in your videos and that kind of thing. So it's like a photo slideshow, but amped up. It's mm-hmm. just really well done, enjoyable to watch. And what is extra cool is that if you're a teacher, you can sign up for Animoto for free. So they have a level of account where you can get free access, but you can only make 30-second videos. Mm-hmm. But if you are a teacher, you can get their all-access pass, which is normally $30 a year, but you can get that for free. So all you have to do is prove to them, you know, maybe send them your school web address and that kind of thing, and there's an application online, and you get an access. But what's cool about it is you get an access for not just you, but for your students as well. Mm-hmm. So you can set up these free student accounts, and all of the students you set up have the all access. So you can make 5-minute videos if you want. And you can even get a DVD quality download for $5 per video if you have the all access pass. Mm-hmm. So I introduced this to my students this year. I used the little Google Gmail trick for setting up their accounts. So I used our school Gmail address plus like a number or something with a plus sign in the email address. And that allowed all their accounts to flow through my email address. Mm-hmm. So as they're creating videos, I'm able to monitor them because I get notification of every video that they create. And the kids were just so engrossed in this tool. They used it for doing things like videos about the Reformation and all kinds of different projects that I gave them. And they just couldn't stop making videos. They were working on it from home and all kinds of things. They really enjoyed working with Animoto. So very engaging to the students and giving them a different platform to share their ideas and things. Mm-hmm. So highly recommend Animoto for educators.
Yeah, they do a fantastic job. I can think of lots of ministry applications. You mentioned one, they're right in the classroom, but even for promotional videos for school or church, or as an introductory video to a Bible class or promotional video that you can put on your website to encourage your members to consider attending this class. Very easy. You just have to come up with some kind of imagery, pictures, series of pictures, videos, whatever. And they do all the hard work. They make you look really good. So they've done a nice job, and can't beat the price too for educators.
We actually used it with our women's group. We do an Advent by Candlelight.
Oh, yeah, you were telling me about that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, kind of the culmination of the whole program was an Animoto video that we had put together that just was the icing on the cake. Mm-hmm. So lots of applications there.
Great. All right. My number two is a free application put out by the creators of the Lifehacker blog, and that is Texter. And Texter is a simple macro application, Windows only, unfortunately, but it runs in your system tray and it monitors your keystrokes. So what happens is you tell it, whenever I type these particular characters and follow that with an enter key or some function key, it's a configurable key, it could be even just a space, substitute that text with this text. So I use it primarily for signatures. So if I want to use a more fuller signature in my emails, I'll type a certain key combination. If I want to include a shorter key combination or a shorter signature, I have a different key combination. So I hit M, enter, and it just inserts my name and maybe phone number. Or if I type in MAS, my initials, it's going to give me, you know, the fuller name, my title, my email, my website, you know, those kinds of things, all behind the scenes. So I can have multiple email clients. I can have multiple approaches to how I respond to email. Or if there's stock responses, and sometimes I get the same question over and over, you know, tell me more about the Cenid's web hosting program, or what about ShopWells? I've got some boilerplate text that I put in Texter, and I have a key combination that I enter a couple keys, hit enter, and it puts in the boilerplate text, and away I go. Just a huge, I've saved hours and hours this year using Texter. It's really lightweight. It works. Highly recommended.
You know, Martin, you got me on this one. This is something I have never adopted. They call them hot strings, I think, mm-hmm. where you can actually do a quick keystroke and get a whole string of text to show up.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe that'll be my New Year's resolution to try out Texter.
Yep. There are paid-for applications that offer more features, application launchers and template builders and those kinds of things. One of them on the Windows side is ActiveWords, which I think I recommended long, long ago. That was a little bit overkill for what I wanted to do, so I went to Texter. Or on the Mac side, Text Expander. Most people are very familiar with that on the Mac side, which does exactly the same thing. Lots of features, and really is a time saver. It can be if you have repetitive text. So that's the whole point.
Very good. All right, time for my number one, and I'm going to redeem Google. So here we go with the Google pick. Pick of the year, mobile Google Sync for my iPod Touch. I remember when we interviewed Pastor Hans Calway, and he had an iPhone, and I was just in such envy because mm-hmm. he was talking about how wonderful it was to be able to pull together his contacts and his calendar and things like that and in this small device that he could have with him at any time. And I think when we first interviewed him, maybe all the applications weren't really in place to do that super seamlessly. But now they are, and the one that I rely on and the one that's really made a huge impact for me is the mobile Google Sync. We use Google Calendar in particular for our church and our school. So being able to have the church and school calendar with me at all times is just amazing. And this, I can say the same for my husband, who's the pastor here at Sleepy Eye. He references it constantly on his iPod Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And we also imported from Shepherd Staff, our membership database, all of the contacts information into our Google Contacts list so that that too could sync to our iPod Touch. And by having that information at hand, I can't tell you how many times we've been at the hospital visiting someone and realized someone else was there and we're able to call them on their cell phone and see if we could stop by and visit them. And mm-hmm. just having that information at your fingertips in a ministry type setting is a very powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
The iPod Touch has changed my perspective this year. and this is probably the most relied on resource that I use, the calendar, the contacts, and then being able to sync my Gmail with the email on the iPod Touch as well. I guess my one complaint would be I still need a camera and video camera and GPS, which you can only get on the iPhone. but just having these applications has been an amazing breakthrough for me.
Well, I'm sure Apple's listening, and they'll come through for you at some point.
Okay, I'm waiting.
I mean, this is an important point, and ministry is about people and meeting with people. And if you don't have your calendar and contacts, that's going to be hard to do. And that's a great reason to always have this stuff with you. And I think these tools make it easier and easier. I remember the days when I carried a paper address book and a paper calendar, and far less useful now. It's you can search it, you can you know, call them instantly, you can attach notes, all those things, which I think make us better able to connect with people.
Right. And of course, that whole synchronization process, we're not wireless on the, the iPod Touch always. You know, we don't always have a Wi-Fi connection, but even when we're offline, we can update the calendar, update the contacts, and the next time we are wireless, then it all synchronizes. So if I make a change to the church calendar for whatever reason, my husband has it instantly on his iPod Touch. So just an amazing power there.
Good. Great pick, even though it is Google.
Yeah.
All right. My pick is something that I've set up once and I don't think about for the entire rest of the time that it's installed. And that's a great thing about, that's a one good thing about technology that works is that you really don't have to think about it. And that's a cloud-based backup solution called Backblaze. Some of you are probably familiar with Mozy or Carbonite. Backblaze is in that same category. $50 a year or $5 a month, unlimited cloud-based backups. You simply install the application. You have a limit, a file size limit of 4 gigabytes. So if you've got files larger than 4 gigabytes, I think you've got some other problems. But
yeah,
that's huge. But it'll do external drives, so anything that's attached. It won't do network drives, so they're not going to back up your entire network. Sorry, network administrators. But it will back up external drives that are attached, Windows or Mac. The first backup will take a while. It doesn't back up applications or system files, so it knows the difference. But everything else, it just goes through and does it. You don't have to do any configuring, really. You just point it at the drives that you want to back up. You turn it on, and it just works in the background. So as you add new files to your system, it backs them up, and restoration of the files is really simple. You have a website, secure website that you can go to. You enter your credentials. You pick what kind of restore method you want. The default one and the free one is downloading a zip file. So you say, I want this one, this one, this one, and this one restored. It will zip it up and then send you an email when it's ready for download. If you've got a lot of stuff that you need to restore, so you had maybe an entire disk failure, you have a $99 option for them to send you a DVD up to 4 gigabyte limit there, FedEx overnight, so you can get it the next day. Not too bad. Or if you've got more than 4 gigabytes stored there, so you've got your entire disk, you know, just went bye-bye, they will send you a USB hard drive, Western Digital hard drive, $189, 400 gigabyte max. But whatever you had is going to come to you via USB hard disk, and you got all your stuff back. So fire, theft, you know, any of the bad things that can happen are all kind of mitigated by this cloud-based storage, and I've never had any issues with it. It just runs. It sits in the system tray, again, Windows, Mac, and lifesaver. Fortunately, I've only had to use it a couple times on some smaller files that I had either were corrupted or were accidentally deleted. I got them back through this backup, and Backblaze.com, just an awesome, awesome tool.
Well, that was my one question for you was, have you ever restored anything? I think that's the scary thing for me. Sometimes the backups can be so cryptic.
Yep.
It's hard to find your way to the correct files.
Well, what happens is you go online and you basically see a representation of your drive. So when I go to Backblaze.com, I can see my C drive. I can see my E drive, which is my little portable hard drive. And I can see all the folder structure, and I can drill down into the exact files that I want and have access to everything. And I can be very selective about what I want to restore, and or just to check up and make sure that it's updating properly. I just did that this morning. Said I built a couple large files. I want to make sure it backed up, and sure enough, they were right there. I didn't have to do anything. So great tool.
Sweet, very good.
Well, Sally, you have anything? I had an honorable mention. I don't know if you did. You did too. My honorable mention, which didn't make my top three, but kind of changed the way I worked a little bit this year, was a browser, Google Chrome. In the Synod office, we are pretty much a Microsoft shop. So we have a lot of applications that run on Internet Explorer. So I use Internet Explorer a lot and still do. But for personal stuff, and even in the office, for things that don't render exactly right in Internet Explorer, I found that Google Chrome is a great substitute. Runs really fast now with the addition of extensions like Firefox has. I can't think of a reason that Firefox would win out over Google Chrome. Google Chrome is going to be a lot faster. I think it's more secure. And just a great, great browser. And yeah, makes it anything to speed the process up and simplify things. And that's what Google Chrome does. So I gave Google a little love there anyway.
There you go. Can't get by without that Google love.
That's right.
Yeah, I just wanted to point to one of my favorite things this year, and it wasn't a pick, but going outside the picks, we mm-hmm. did do a show about my geeking out kitchen.
Oh, yes.
And that was just a lot of fun, a neat do-it-yourself project that we put together this year at our house. And we have an under-the-counter mounted laptop computer. And we have really, really enjoyed that this year. And I think, you know, maybe that's a thing of the future, that we'll have more of that kind of technology easily mm-hmm. accessible to us, and those kind of, you know, what would you want to say? Locations, mm-hmm. you know, easily accessible
where
in our
you
kitchen,
need it, right?
Where everybody is, right where we need it. But we've used it for a digital picture frame. We've used it for streaming radio. We've been listening to Christmas radio all this month.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we use it for searching the internet and, you know, looking up something and sharing it. My son will see a good YouTube video that he wants us to watch or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so just having it in that central location up off the counter, so it's not really taking up space, but it's accessible to us, has been a really fun thing for us this year. So
cool.
Just had to put in a plug for my geeky kitchen.
So do you have recipes on there too? Naturally, that would be a fit in the kitchen.
Naturally, it would if I were a cook, Mark, but I'm a geek, so, but I could look up a recipe if I needed to.
Okay, or links to your favorite restaurants, too.
There you go.
All right. Next week, which is going to be kind of a special show, starting the new year, it'll be episode 113, but it'll also be our the WellsTech two-year anniversary, 2 years behind us, and we look forward to another year. And we're going to address the question, and again, stuck in a rut. We're going to, I think, answer the same question we answered at our first anniversary show, and that's why WellsTech? Why do we have this podcast? So there'll be a lot of community feedback, and Sal and I will kind of discuss technology in ministry. And in addition, we have a neat interview to share. We had a chance to talk on the phone with Nelson Saba, who is the creator of the Glow Bible. You've heard us talk about the Glow Bible before, a interactive multimedia Bible that comes on, I think it's 3 discs. You install it, and all kinds of cool resources related to that, this interactive Bible. He's the CEO of Immersion Digital. We hear a little bit about his background and how the Glow Bible came to be. So tune in next week for our 2-year anniversary and a discussion on why WellsTech and our interview with Nelson Saba. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think our listeners will really enjoy that interview. I know I did, Martin,
mm-hmm.
and we get a little bit of insight into the future with Glow Bible,
right,
which makes it pretty exciting as well.
Yep, straight from the founder. Always good to go to the source. Let's close our last show of the year with the music from a new band, the Branches Band. We've heard one of their songs in the Advent season here that we just emerged from. This is also a Christmas song, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, from the Branches Band and their album, A Branch Is Growing. Blessings on everybody's New Year celebrations. Thanks for joining us again, and come back next year. We've got more for you.
blessed day.